life is to get rid of all miseries and enjoy happiness. But these two things cannot be realized by fruitive activity. Yay. And something else is going on too. All right. Also you say, Narada Muni asked King Prachini Barishat.
My dear King,
what do you desire to achieve
by performing these fruitive activities?
The chief aim of life
is to get rid of all miseries
and enjoy happiness.
But these two things cannot be realized
by fruitive activity.
Purport.
In this material world, there is a great illusion which covers real intelligence. A man in the mode of passion wants to work very hard to derive some benefit, but he does not know that time will never allow him to enjoy anything permanently. Compared to the work one expends, the gain is not so profitable. Even if it is profitable, it is not without its distresses. So it doesn't last, it's not worth the investment, and what do you really get out of it? If a man is not born rich and he wants to purchase a house, cars, and many other material things, he has to work hard day and night for many years in order to possess them. Thus, happiness is not attained without undergoing some distress. Actually, pure happiness cannot be had within this material world. If we wish to enjoy something, we must suffer for something else. Sorry, Prabhus, but there it is. We may not like it, but there it is. On the whole, suffering is the nature of this material world, and whatever enjoyment we are trying to achieve is simply illusion. After all, we have to suffer the miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death. We may discover many fine medicines, but it is not possible to stop the suffering of disease and death altogether. Actually, medicine is not the counteracting agent for either disease or death. On the whole, there is no happiness in the material world, but an illusion person works very hard for so-called happiness. Indeed, this process of working hard is actually taken as happiness. This is called illusion. Therefore, Narada Muni asked King Prachini Barishat what he desired to attain by performing so many costly sacrifices. Even if one attains a heavenly planet, he cannot avoid the distresses of birth, old age, disease, and death. Someone may argue that even devotees have to undergo many distresses in executing austerities and penance connected with devotional service. Of course, for the neophyte, the routine of devotional service may be very painful, but at least they have the hope that they will ultimately be able to avoid all kinds of distress and achieve the highest perfectional stage of happiness. For the common karmis, there is no such hope, because even if they are promoted to the higher planetary systems, they are not guaranteed freedom from the miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death. Even Lord Brahma, who is situated in the highest planetary system, Brahmaloka, has to die. Lord Brahma's birth and death may be different from the ordinary man's, but within this material world, one cannot avoid the distresses of birth, old age, disease, and death. If one is at all serious about attaining liberation from these miseries, he must take to devotional service. This is confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Chame Devyam Evam Yoveta Tattvata Takvadeya Pranar Janma Naiti Mam Eti Sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Thus, after attaining full Krishna consciousness, the devotee does not return to the material world after death. He goes back home, back to Godhead. That is the perfect stage of happiness, unblemished by any trace of distress. Om Aganatim Arandasya Gena Ganasalakaya Jokshushum Militan Gena Tazari Shri Gurave Namaha. So how we see this world determines how we experience it. And, you know, we're all looking out through the windows of the eyes, and I see this gentleman with the beard and the blue shirt, and, you know. So I see one thing, but if you know him as his friend or his brother or his, you know, you see it differently. I visit temples. I usually see a couple of people I've tossed out from here and there. So, you know, according to your relationship, I was driving in a car one time with some devotees. In Mexico, we were buying silver for the deities, silver stuff. And they were selling iguanas by the road. You ever seen an iguana? Big size. Maybe this big around, maybe about this long. In my memory, they get bigger, but probably about this big. So different people were stopping and purchasing iguanas. Now, one person was thinking, one group was thinking, I asked them, what are you thinking? Oh, I'll take it home, it'll be a nice pet. There was another group from Jamaica, not to pick on Jamaicans, but there was a group from Jamaica, and they were thinking, cook it up, iguana stew. So they were seeing a tasty morsel. Someone else was seeing a pet. You know, and the devotees, we were thinking, oh my gosh, what did you do to get that body, you know? Hare Krishna. So according, same exact circumstance, but seeing it and experiencing it and thinking about it differently. So seeing is not believing. One has to see through the eyes of knowledge. Chanaka Pandit says, a beautiful young lady's walking, materially beautiful, walking down the road. So a lecherous man's thinking, hey, hey, baby, you know, don't I know you from, so whatever it is, you know, he'll say whatever he'll say, you know. He's thinking something to enjoy, you know. And Chanaka Pandit says, a tiger thinks, oh, tasty morsel. He's thinking, hey, just like we saw a nice samosa or gulab jamun, you know, we think, hey, thank you very much. So he's thinking like that, seeing completely different. And a Vaishnava is thinking, here's part and parcel of Krishna, you know, spirit, soul, let me engage them in Krishna's service. So where the vision, this previous chapter was called, where is it? Maybe it's the next chapter. It's talking about renunciation. Ultimately, this section is laid in Narada Muni's descriptions of the four orders. And he's coming to the point of renunciation. And curiously enough, he's going to go into the story of King Paranjan. Now, how does that relate to becoming a renunciate? So, it's all in how you see things. That's the point I'm trying to make, or going to try to make in this class. That the angle of vision. The Bhagavatam, just as it says here, what does Prabhupada say? Narada Muni's asking. Sometimes they think, oh, religion, oh, it's some theoretical thing, armchair philosophy, it's, you know, or you don't understand my life. But here it's saying, right, who can argue with this statement? Boil it down. What do they say, like, 8/64 is 4 30 seconds, and 4 30 seconds is 2 16ths, and 2 16ths is 1 8th. So the lowest, simplest common denominator. If you were to reduce all human endeavor, in fact, the endeavor of every living entity, here it is. Here's the sutra. It's what it's all about. Everybody is doing it. What are they doing? So we understand. Narada Muni says right here, the chief aim of life, get rid of miseries and enjoy happiness. Who can argue? Now, how you define happiness, how you define distress, that's another issue. But in those two categories, I just want to become free from misery and I just want to become happy. We know that. The Vaishnavas know that. The Shastra knows that. The Sadhus know that. And here they're addressing, okay, what are you going to do about it? The point is, we know the question. We actually want the same thing. So it's not that we don't understand the issue. We don't understand what's in their mind. The great sadhus don't want to see us suffer. There's the old joke. How much time do we have? Anyway, there's the quick joke. The man goes to Rome. He goes down into the catacombs. He's studying the ancient texts. He's gone back from the Roman to the Aramaic to the, you know, he's gone back to the original, beyond the Greek. And all of a sudden you hear this, no! So the guy comes up, he's completely distraught. They say, what's the problem? He said, it doesn't say celibate, it says celebrate. So, you know, the idea that, well, it's just, you know, religious life, it means to impose some deep austerity and, you know, men in black, grim, trying to, you know, we're not talking that at all. We know what the issue is. We want the same thing. We want to become free from distress and we want to become happy. So here, Prachinibhari is very active. The king here is very active. Narada Muni is saying, hold on a second. Why are you doing it? Why? Just like when Narada Muni met Magrari the hunter. He asked him, you know, why are you leaving these animals half dead? He said, well, this is my sport. This is the way I do it. My father did it this way. My father's father did it this way. I remember my father telling me when I was, you know, now son, it's time to go off to college, get an education so you can have a good career, so you can marry a nice wife and get a good house in the suburbs and send your kids to college. And I said, why? Why? What do I get out of all this? He said, well, what do you mean, why? That's what everybody does. That's what you do, isn't it? You get an education. What do they say? What is it? Education, occupation, marriage. Of course, you know, usually it's all screwed up, but that's the sequence you're supposed to actually follow. Get a nice education, get some money, cash in the bank, marry a nice wife or a nice husband, and get a house full of kids and go to Kmart and drop dead. Kijai. So, you know, I mean, why? So here, that's the point. Human life means to ask, why? Hang on a sec. Where is this train going? How is it going to result? So he's asking that, why? And Prabhupada's making the point. He's saying, what you're working very hard. Was it dharmasya hi apavargasya? The real purpose of dharma is to put an end to the process of pavarga. And there's that fantastic lecture by Prabhupada. He breaks down the syllabus of pavarga. And it basically, one is working very hard, full of anger, so hard one foams at the mouth. I remember seeing, we used to ride the bus from downtown Detroit, Jefferson, down Jefferson to the temple. And on the way was the Uniroyal Tire Factory. You know, Prabhupada says factory is another name for hell. No question about it. And it was very interesting because you'd see the devotees had worked very hard for Krishna. And it was maybe, I think we're trying to get home for 6:30 RT, so maybe 5:30 at night. You know, devotees had worked very hard. And all that hall of it didn't help. So when the devotees got on the bus, you know, the devotees would fall asleep. And you'd see these big Polish guys that had been working at the Hamtramck, you know, Uniroyal Tire Factory. They were exhausted too. And you'd see, it was not uncommon to see the big guy would fall asleep. You saw the skinny little brahmachari. They'd be snuggled up on the bus seat together, you know, both sound asleep. Just as a side light, we would always fall asleep and the bus driver was trained up. Because if we didn't, we wouldn't wake up, we'd miss our stop. He'd get all the way to the end. He'd have to turn around and drop us off. So he got to the point he was trained up. He'd just stop. He'd say, hey, Jefferson and Seminole, wake up, Krishnas. And we'd, oh, okay. We'd all stumble off the bus, you know. But we were working hard. And the materialist, he was working hard. But Prabhupada's making the point. So fine. Let's step back and look at the equation. And Prabhupada's saying here, you invest so much work. What do you get out of it? Just think about the numbers. 7 days in a week, right? Last time I looked. 7 days in a week. Now, they work how many days? Why are they working? What is it? Isn't there a restaurant called TGIF? Thank God it's Friday, right? My son-in-law woke up. He was super bummed. It's a long story, but I'm staying at their house for a few days. So he was really downcast, you know. I said, what happened? He said, oh, man, another week. I said, hey, it's Friday. He thought it was Monday. As soon as I said it's Friday, he was, hey, wow. He said, you know, I feel great. So you invest 5 days of work. Why? So you can get 2 days off. Well, do the math. 5 days to get two, that's not a fair equation. If I worked for 2 days and got 5 days of fun, that's a good deal. So just the way the whole thing is set up, if you look at it. Prabhupada gives the example, there's a farmer. The farmer is sitting peacefully on his couch, on his porch. He's enjoying. You know, it's a peaceful, enjoying. Nice scenery. He's there in Vrindavan. Picture one of those nice Vrindavan scenes, peacocks, wheat field, mango trees, children there, families there. He hears the bell ringing from the temple. He's, you know, Hare Krishna, happy. So the man from the city pulls up and says, you know, you're just sitting here. You know, you should work. If you put in a double shift, you could get more crops. You could get a bigger field. You could make a larger profit. You could retire earlier. The man says, okay, and when I've done all that and I retire early, what can you do? He said, you can sit on your porch and enjoy the view. He said, I'm doing that now, you know. What's the gain, you know? So the simple point, not to pick on my father, he's a good man, he passed away recently, but he's a good man, was a good man. But even he made this observation. He moved from Pasadena down to Three Arch Bay, Laguna Beach. And the reason was he wanted to have a house by the beach where he could sit in the beautiful bay window and look at the ocean and just see the, even Prabhupada says you see the waves, it's very cooling for the Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you're seeing the waves, makes the mind peaceful. So he just wanted to, and his kids could play on the beach, he could play with his kids on the beach and just enjoy the peaceful scene. He wanted to have a big, so to do that, he had to work in Los Angeles. And after a few years, the traffic got so bad, it was 4 hours in the car and 4 hours back. So he couldn't drive down every, it was killing him driving down every day. So he got a place in L.A. So he would actually drive up early Monday morning and get back late, late, late Friday night. And so he was living, actually, he told me, he said, I'm living in L.A.
And occasionally I get to visit my house. And what happened, you know, America, man's best friend, we had a dog. And my father's favorite chair, where he could sit and enjoy the view, he would leave 3 o'clock in the morning, Monday morning, the dog would jump in the chair. The dog would stay in the chair all week long. My father would come back, 10 o'clock at night, Friday night, and chase the dog out of the chair. He said, actually, he said, the dog is enjoying the house. He said, the dog, it's the most expensive dog house in America. The dog's enjoying, I'm slaving for the dog. Dog's got the view. So, I mean, and recently they had these fires, you know, all these fires, and Hare Krishna, sorry to hear it. But you read again and again, if you read the quotes in the paper, these people have been burned out of their houses. They say again and again, I have to start all over again. I've lost everything. I have to start all over again. So in Greek mythology, there's Sisyphus. You know Sisyphus? Sisyphus is, I forget what he did, but he was cursed to roll this boulder up a hill. Huge boulder. And if he got it over the top of the hill, picture a hill and a crest. I think he had an eagle picking at his liver at the same time. You know, Greek graphics. But the point is, he had to roll this rock up this hill. If he got to the crest and pushed it over the crest and it fell off the other side, then he was free. I think he was in hell. Sounds like hell to me. So, but the point is, and he would struggle and sweat and slip and fall. And just as the sun was about to set, the rock was just teetering at the boulder at the very time. He would make one last Herculean push, slip, fall, and the rock would roll all the way back down again. And he had to start all over the next day. That day after day after day. That's Sisyphus. And the practical fact of the matter is, this is the wheel of samsara. Over and over and over and over. And nobody wins. I remember Shukadev may have said this to me. Shukadev was one of the first devotees I met, and I'm internally in his debt. I don't know if you remember this. I was in Laguna Beach, a golden boy, enjoying life like anything, thinking everything is, you know, a bed of roses. And I think it was you, either you or Durlab, at one point saw me in my deep illusion and turned to me and said, you know, nobody gets out of here alive. I thought, man, these Hare Krishnas are heavy. I remember thinking, I said, that is such a heavy way to look at things. But it ate at me. I thought about it. It just stirred my, and I thought, you know, he's completely correct. Nobody gets out alive. What is the ultimate issue? So the simple point I'm trying to make, I was sitting in the room one time. A man said to Prabhupada, Indian gentleman, oh, sooner, Swamiji. Sooner or later, I will surrender to Krishna. Prabhupada said, better sooner. Do you know you have a later? Who's got that guarantee? Or I was also thinking, there's a story about the man who has the complaint to Yamaraj. He's just about to get his third daughter married, and his other kid is just about to graduate, and you know, he was just about to make the investment, and everything was, you know, and dies of, as Prabhupada says, cerebral thrombosis. It's a blood clot in the brain. You just kick over, bam, drop dead. So he goes before Yamaraj, says, hey, where's the complaint department? Where's the complaint box? I mean, I don't recommend you pick a fight with Yamaraj, but anyway, he wanted to, and Yamaraj said, what's the complaint? I'm doing my job. He said, no. He said, you pulled me out. I had so many things to finish. I had to get my dimwit son-in-law out of my will. I had so many things to do. And all of a sudden, I had so many things to finish. You gave me no warning. Yamaraj said, what? What do you mean? Didn't I give you glasses? Didn't I give you a cane? Didn't I give you gray hair? So many warnings are there. So the simple point I'm trying to make is that this is, or think about it again. I remember when I was a kid. I was the youngest in my family. I wanted to go to school like anything. Got myself into kindergarten. Thought, okay, been there, done that. Enough of that. My mom said, no, you got to stay there for a year. But I remember looking through the fence and seeing the first graders, elementary school, big swing, sports field. Hey, that'll be cool. So I'll hang out here. I can tolerate. But in the future, when I get into elementary school, then I have fun. You know, 1 year of elementary school, Mrs. Piroth, she was left over from the Gestapo. That's enough of that. But don't worry, when you get into junior high, hey, I can play football. Okay, fine, I'll talk. What can I do? It's like jail, but I'll serve my time, I'll get in there. And you know how it goes, you get into high school, oh, there'll be girlfriends, like this and that, and then they're, oh man, I can hardly wait to get out of high school. When I get out of high school, I'll go to college, get away from my parents. What's not to love? Send money, live without your parents, fantastic. You talk to any freshman, they think like that.
They say you get, what is it, 20 pounds? Usually they gain 15-pound freshman pounds, they call it, because they gorge on pizza and stay up all night long. It's a phenomenon. It's a known phenomenon. At the end, you ask them, senior year, I can hardly wait to get out of this place. I want to get out in the real world. I want to get my job. Then they get out, they're working. What do you want to do? I want to work up the corporate ladder. Why? Because I want to retire. So they're looking in the future, looking in the future, looking in the future. And when they finally retire, before Alzheimer's sets in, they're sitting on the porch, and what are they thinking? Oh, when I was a kid, it was so much fun in elementary school and my old friends in college. When I mean, I've met people, the apex of their life, they peaked. It was all downhill after they caught the high school homecoming game pass and made that touchdown. That was it. They peaked. It's been downhill ever since. So that's, and so Narada Muni's asking, what do you get out of it? What's the investment? What's the ultimate end? Why? And it doesn't even make you happy, and you have to work so hard. Is this what it's all about? So this is the simple point being made. One last thing I wanted to say. Prabhupada also says about because I want to read something else. The question Prabhupada makes here, okay, fine. The materialists are suffering. We accept that. Suffering, struggling, right? But devotees are also suffering. There's that morning walk. You should listen to it sometime. Prabhupada's on a morning walk in Mayapur. And he's coming back towards the temple because you can hear in the distance, you can hear the kirtan. And you know, Prabhupada just comes out with those fantastic statements. All of a sudden, Prabhupada turns and you hear him say, devotees don't suffer. There's a long pause. This is our first year in Mayapur. Anyone who was there that first year in Mayapur, I mean, it was rough, you know? So devotees are, I mean, we had one devotee who, the bathroom was backed up, went to do his business in the field, dropped his flashlight, brushed his teeth instead of toothpaste with Odomos, and stepped in a pile of cow dung. Got so surprised, ran back, lost his gumption. I mean, the guy came back in his copans, you know, covered with mosquito bites and Odomos for toothpaste, you know. That was our first year. We've made advancement, Prabhu. We have figured a few things out since those days. But the point is that, you know, then Prabhupada's on this walk, and everybody's got dysentery. I had sunstroke. I actually got sunstroke, you know, chanting and dancing 1 o'clock, and, you know, what is it? Nothing but mad dong and Englishmen go out in the noonday sun. So I'm Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. I came home. I don't feel so good. I woke up. I thought it was 4 hours later. I had been completely conked out for 48 hours. Out cold. So you've got Prabhupada saying, devotees don't suffer. There's this long pause. And then you hear Pancha Devita says, well, Prabhupada, then what is exactly the devotees are doing? I mean, it looks like suffering. And then Prabhupada laughs. He says, but that's all right. He said, all right. But after this life, back home, back to Godhead. And I remember sitting with Srila Prabhupada in the garden in Detroit. And if you've been to that Devasadhan Mandir, if you sit out in the garden, there's a canal, or channel, whatever you call it. There's the river. I think it's Lake St. Clair, which when I was there caught on fire and burned for 3 days from pollution. But that's another story. And I think it's the Detroit River goes by, and there's a channel that comes off there. It goes right by. It's like from here to, you know, this far away. And Prabhupada was sitting here, and this man came along in a boat. And he was like this, distance away. And he just went off. He began shouting. He said, you Hare Krishnas, you're living in that big house. I've seen you always have those big feasts. And, you know, I see you guys, you're always happy. And, you know, and expecting us to become defensive. But Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada said, yes, so come and join. You know, at which point the guy just completely blew a gasket, you know, and he begins cursing and swearing and this and that. And off, he couldn't get his motor started on his boat, his motor, and the tide began carrying him. And literally, he was being drifting out to the river, out to the lake, and, you know, whereabouts unknown. Off he was going. He had the moment's association with a saintly person, didn't take advantage of it, like the sojourn of the soul, and off who knows where he goes. So the point is that, yes, the devotees suffer. This world is suffering. It's on the package. Read the label. Krishna says, you know, I see these people in the supermarkets. They're always reading the story, how many, you know, what carbohydrates, this and that, what's in the whole thing, and, you know, reading very carefully. But Krishna says this material world is temporary, and it's full of misery. He made it. It's on the label.
What more do you want? So the simple thing is, if one has vision, I want to read something, but if one has transcendental vision, that's our point, how to see this world. There was a devotee who, he was underage, and his parents became heartbroken when he became a devotee. And they actually had him institutionalized because he was underage, you know, for a 48-hour observation or whatever it is. So the devotee, they said, he says, Krishna told me I can't work at this job anymore. He's working at a pizza factory, no sardines on the pizza. You know, he can't do that anymore. I can't work in it. So he said, why? Well, Krishna told me I can't work. Well, who's Krishna? A beautiful blue boy playing a flute. So the parents hear that and say he's hearing voices and seeing visions. That's the way they... So the psychiatrist who's, giving the, analyzing or interviewing him to get his original, what's his condition. And he says, your parents say you're hearing voices. Are you seeing things? They're sitting in the solarium outside. There's, it's sealed. You can't get out, but it's out there in the sun. There's a table, and there's a vase of flowers on the table. So he said, do you see things? The devotee says, well, I see the same things you see, but I don't see what you see. At which point, how does that make you feel? So the devotee began to describe, and the devotee said, just like you see these flowers. He said, when I see these flowers, I see earth, fire, water, air, ether. He described the material nature. He went into describing the Sankhya Yoga, the 25 elements. He said, they're always in different transient forms. Now there is flowers, but they've become so many different things. He said, so that's what I see. I see Krishna's immutable material energy, and behind is the transcendent Supreme Lord, Ahamsa Vasya Prabhu Mata Savam Pavartate. Whereas you see flowers, and you're thinking, let me give them the pretty nurse and exploit her. And the doctor, to his credit, said, that's the most profound thing I've ever heard in my life. He said, you're the first sane person I've ever met. That's a true story. So he signed him out. He said, you don't belong in here. He said, your work is too important. I'm going to release you immediately, So just as the young man was being released at the front desk, the father shows up. The father sees the son, sees the doctor, says, well, how's it going? The doctor says, oh, well, we've made a major breakthrough, and I think, we're really making progress here, and I'm releasing your son today. So the father begins hyperventilating and, has an anxiety attack. The psychiatrist says, I think you have undue attachments to your son, and this, I think we should... And the son, the father was committed. It's true, they took the father for 48 hours, So the simple point I'm trying to make is that, and I want to read this, but the... It all depends on how we see the world. Suffering is going to be there. Oh, here's what I was going to say. Beyond things, we were talking, process working, Prabhupada says here in the purport, car, house, this and that. But in addition to that, when you talk to people, what really matters in the ultimate ministry of people is some friend. I had a wife who was my life partner who loved me and understood me. Or I had my good best, old friends, people you've known for, your original Sankirtan devotees when you were the brahmachari in the ashram, or, whatever it is, your first temple president, whatever. Or, your high school buddy or whatever. Old friends who've known you for, relationships. It's even more important than things. Things, people say in these fires, things can be replaced, but, relationships. If we think about it, I saw a sign coming up. It said, what a friend we have in Jesus. And I was thinking, I was listening to a tape, and Prabhupada, this is the way Prabhupada saw the world. He knew that behind this material nature and directing this material nature was his good friend Krishna, and that he was engaged in Krishna's service. Prabhupada's peeling an orange, a nice orange, maybe it's a tangerine. Prabhupada turns to the devotees and said, how can they say there's no God? It comes so nicely packaged. And you think about it, nice organic wrapping, individual servings. It's perfect. You can eat half the tangerine. It's perfect. You don't need saran wrap. You don't need anything, It's perfect arrangement. And Prabhupada saw the whole world like that. He always saw that behind everything is Krishna, my friend Krishna. And if I'm in a difficult situation, Krishna wants to purify me. Or Krishna maybe wants me to set an example for others. So many different reasons why devotees suffer. But we know that behind it is Krishna. That Bhakti Raghava Maharaj, who had that bad leg, I forget his uninitiated, before he took sannyas. But he was in Mayapur.
It'll come to me later on. But he had a bad He had a bad leg. And it caused him a lot of pain. And he used to use those crutches. Now, when the dacoits attacked the temple, thinking that Radharani, Ashtatap, the beautiful, you know, Taptakanchana Gaurange, they thought she was solid gold. They were going to steal the Radhakrishna deities, melt them down, and make money. This was their plan. So Muslims. And they attacked the temple. And in the course of that attack of the temple, they make these bombs. They just take some kind of explosive device with a fuse, gunpowder and a fuse, bunch of nails, wrap it in black tape with the fuses coming out, light the fuse and hang it. When it blows, you know, it goes inside, it blows up. The nails fly everywhere. It's, you know, very nasty thing. So they threw some of those. Either Pankajangari or Jananivas, saintly persons, ran through the hail of bullets and bombs, took the keys and threw the keys out into the rice field so they couldn't get at the gate to get the deities, you know, get into the deities' paraphernalia and everything. It's a long story. But in the course of that, also Bhakti Raghava Maharshi, to save the deities, was charging through. They threw one of these bombs, blew the bad leg right off. What was his response when he came to and was at the... He said, I was thinking about having removed anyway. Only a devotee would think like that. We had a gentleman, he's actually a very nice Vaishnav. His house, it's told some of the other devotees, they had these fires. He's sound asleep. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 in the morning. He has a big, big house. He's sleeping in the back. It's a one story, but it's tiered. It goes down like this. His personal part is here. Front house is here. He's got all this high tech stuff. This has never happened before. He's lived there for years and years. All of a sudden, 3:30, the sound system, boom, goes off. It's a Prabhupada bhajan. He wakes up. What's that? You know, and it's very loud. Otherwise, he would have slept right through it. So he thinks, well, I'll go turn it down, turn it off. You know, it's some... He's walking from his bedroom. He walks through this hallway that connects where the sound system is. It's all glass on either side. He sees that his entire house is surrounded by flames. He thought, oh my gosh. Grabs his deities, grabs his car keys, jumps in his car. And as he drives down the car, the flames have already lit the back part of his where his bedroom was. And they're burning down the driveway. He literally escaped with his life within seconds. If that tape hadn't gone off, he would have, there's no question. He would have been killed, either by, you know, smoke inhalation, would have just never, you know, carbon monoxide never would have awakened or been burned. There's no question about it. His entire house, nothing is left. Nothing. I mean, nothing. It was so hot that the marble walls expanded, exploded, and turned to dust. So there's literally nothing of his house. So what's his response? He said, you know, I live so far from the temple that it was hard for me to come to the morning program. He said, you know, now I'll get the insurance money. I'll get a house close to the temple. I can come for Mangal Arati. That was his response. I mean, actually, he lost everything. I mean, literally, he was staying in a hotel. I said, I don't want to mention his name because I want to embarrass him. I said, Prabhu, I said, what do you have? He said, well, I got room service. I mean, that's it. He had nothing. He literally had his wallet. I think he had his wallet, you know. So there's so many examples that how with transit, we have Prabhupada on his disappearance bed. I've told the story, but I'm going to tell it again. Naveen Krishna's father, top physician in Delhi. Prabhupada had stayed at his house. Those of us, you know, went on a morning walk with Prabhupada. I mean, Prabhupada, you would go on a morning walk in Bombay with Prabhupada. And he would sail down Juhu Beach. He'd turn around and sail back. And you'd be back at the temple, at least me. And I was young. I was 22 years old and I was in good shape. Yes, Prabhu, this will happen. Any 20s, this will happen to you. You know, you'll also get nicked and scraped by time. But anyway, you know, Prabhupada was, you know, strong. I mean, in addition to spiritually, I mean, Prabhupada was just like a lion. So, having seen Prabhupada like that, and then seeing Prabhupada on his disappearance bed in Vrindavan, Dr. Karana, and he went with it. Naveen called him and said, please go see Prabhupada in Vrindavan, see if there's something you can do. They drove down, you know, a fleet of those ambassador cars, went down, different five or six different doctors. They walked into Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada had, he was literally living on Charnamrita and little Tulsi. And his skin was so thin, you know, there was no fatty tissue. The skin, I talked to myself, Dr. Karana told me, that the skin pushing on the bones, it was just pushing the nerves on the bones. He said, an ordinary man would have been writhing in pain. Prabhupada saying, maybe a little massage. So seeing Prabhupada in that condition, after seeing Prabhupada in such robust physical condition, he came in, he was shocked. He was actually shocked. He told me it was like seeing Bhishma on the bed of arrows. He didn't know what to say. For he asked Srila Prabhupada, how are you? He said, Prabhupada held up his hand, you know, the skin is hanging loose, like, you know, what? This, you know, Prabhupada said, it's a bag of bones. That's all that's left is a bag of bones. Like, you know, why even ask? And then Prabhupada asked, how are you? How is your family? Oh, you must have been tired, traveling such a long distance. Would you like some prasadam? Oh, please get him some. You should take some rest first. I'm not going anywhere. Come back and see me in an hour, you know, when you've taken some rest. Dr. Karana, who's actually usually a reserved man, he began to cry. He told me that I'm the physician. I go to see the patient. Usually they're screaming and yelling, complaining. And here is this man with every reason to be in distress. And he's asking about my well-being, how I'm doing, completely transcendent to his own condition. So Jayadvaitamar said one time, as Prabhupada was the acharya in life, he was the acharya in death. And we have this many, many examples of devotees. I mean, we don't have time to take it up, but there's many, many, many examples of devotees in the greatest of adversities. Take it as Krishna's mercy. Confirmed. Taking it as Krishna's mercy. So I wanted to read something, how we should see this world. This is also Narada Muni. Because we're looking out and it's all glittery and sparkly. They just filmed a commercial in San Diego. And some of the devotees said, hey, check it out. It was down at the beach. Now, we don't watch television, the one-eyed idiot, the boob tube, the, you know, the one-eyed bandit, all that, you know, mental mind rot. But the picture on the, here's the conditioned soul, Mr. Couch Potato, watching the television. And he sees on the television all these beautiful people in a wonderful place, best of friends, having an absolutely fantastic time. I mean, they are just all beautiful. The everything is perfect, and they're having a fantastic time. And if he just buys a bud, he'll be happy too, or whatever they're selling. That's the picture. And he's lamenting, oh, look at me, I'll go buy it, you know. That's the mentality. I mean, it's refined in different arenas, but it's the same exact principle. Now, the interesting thing was that they had a two-week cattle call of college students, thousands, maybe, well, probably about 2,000 at least, so that's thousands, who came and were interviewed. Nope, you're too fat, too tall, nose too big, hair the wrong color. So to get, in other words, it's a completely artificial scene. Those people don't exist. They had to weed through so many people to find the right people. Then they don't speak those effervescent witticisms. Those are written by guys, you know, Harvard, you know, graduates and, you know, writing them and their script and they have to practice. So that didn't happen spontaneously either. And they're probably completely envious of each other. They're not best of friends at all. They're not great buddies or wonderful lovers. They're there for 15 minutes reading a script and probably can't stand each other. And the classic thing is they raked all the sand out and shipped in sand from the desert somewhere in Arizona. It wasn't even beach sand. And I was joking with a guy. I said, this is such an artifice. He said, hey, yeah. He said, see that cloud? He said, I'll just get rid of it with digital Photoshop. So even the sky isn't, the whole scene doesn't exist. Now that we can understand easily. But the whole thing is like that. Everything we're seeing is like that. Narada Muni says, and what I'm going to read right now, this is how you see the world. So Narada Muni is speaking to the Haryasvas. This is the 10,000, I think it's the first batch of Daksha's children. So, now, this is a test. You'll still get prasadam if you don't pass. But I'm gonna explain what it is, but I'm going to read it as they heard it first. They heard this verse. They're in great, just like King Puchini Barshat, they were engaged in fruitive activities. They heard these few verses, turned around and left everything and became completely Krishna conscious, having heard this one verse from Narada Muni. So, this is Narada speaking. The great sage Narada said, my dear Hayasvas, you have not seen the extremities of the earth. There is a kingdom where only one man lives and where there's also a hole from which, having entered, no one emerges. A woman there is extremely unchaste and adorns herself with various attractive dresses, and the man who lives there is her husband. In that kingdom, there's a river that flows in both directions. There is also a wonderful home made of 25 materials and a swan that vibrates various sounds.
An automatically revolving object made of sharp razors and thunderbolts spins through that region. You have not seen all this, and therefore you are inexperienced boys without advanced knowledge. How then can you determine what is best for you? Immediately turned around and gave everything up. We need a little elaboration. First statement, you have not seen the extremities of the earth. He's talking about here, earth meaning the field of activities, the wheel of samsara. Prabhupada up here in Chevet Hills, walking in the park, usually walk clockwise. One day walk the other way, said to, who is our guy in Boston, the Mr. Theologian, the actor, Prajapati, who had that Shakespearean voice. He says, I say, Srila Prabhupada, when we walk in the park this direction, seeing it from another angle, it appears like a completely new location. At which point, Prabhupada, you can hear Prabhupada, he really starts to laugh. Prabhupada said, yes. Prabhupada said, this is material life. It is simply eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But we see it in a different body, from a little different angle. We think, oh, it's brand new. But it's the same thing. Just packaged differently, coming at us from a different angle, brand new. So here's saying, it's the same thing. You haven't seen the extremities of this material world. It is the same thing wherever you go. Birth, death, disease, old age, as Prabhupada was saying. Next, there is a kingdom where only one man lives and where there's a hole from which, having entered, no one emerges. It means here, the only enjoyer is Krishna. There's only one enjoy, the only one Purusha, everyone's Prakriti, everyone else. The one hole works both ways. There's the hellish planets, you know, it's Nityabhata. Once one falls into this material cycle and the material planets, practically speaking, one never returns. It's such a long, it's such a dangerous place that we're in. And the other side is that one goes back home, back to Godhead, one never takes birth again. So there's a way, either you can go down and practically never get out, or you can go out. You can come back and, you know, was it Janma Karma Chameya Divyam, as Prabhupada said. A woman there who is extremely unchaste adorns herself with various attractive dresses, and the man who lives there is her husband. That woman, unchastely dressed, is the prostitute, and that means the intelligence. And the intelligence is luring us all. Oh, enjoy here, enjoy here, enjoy here. It's like a menu set. Well, because I started, I'll finish. You have the chariot, which is the body. You have the senses, which are the horses. You have the reins, which is the mind. You have the intelligence, the driver. The soul is the passenger. So the senses relay all the information. The mind sorts it out into different menus. And the intelligence says, you can enjoy this, you can enjoy this, you can enjoy this. It gives you all the different options. Filtered through the false ego, ahankara, according to the intelligence, you think, oh, I'm this, and this is my nature, this is the kind of person I am, so I'll take this menu. So it's popping up, menu after menu after menu. So the intelligence is presenting this. You can enjoy like this, you can enjoy like this, you can enjoy like that. In that kingdom, there's a river that flows in two directions. That means this whole world is simply creation, dissolution, creation and dissolution. That's all. The old Buddhist thing, the only thing that's certain in this world is uncertainty. The only thing that's certain is change. That's it. Krishna says the material nature is constantly mutable. It's the nature of the place. There's a wonderful home there made of 25 elements. That's the material nature, Sankha Yoga, that's described. We're almost done. There is a swan that vibrates various sounds. That is the transcendent, the Vedas, and the spiritual master, who knows how to extract from this material world and give us the right thing. How, even though we're... Prabhupada gave the name Bhavananda to Bhavananda. And he said what that means. Bhavananda told me. He said it means one who enjoys this world. Bhavananda, well, Prabhupada's got my number, you know. And he's like, you know, on one hand, you know, well, is that a curse, you know, on one hand. And Prabhupada said, no, no. Prabhupada said it means one who, the devotee is the one who actually enjoys. The devotee actually enjoys this world. When Prabhupada's on that, I think it's in Denver, Prabhupada's on that walk. And Prabhupada said they're walking in the beautiful park. And Prabhupada said, so? Where are the karmis? I mean, the devotees are walking in the park. The karmis have to work so hard, pay their taxes, build up the city, build the beautiful park. But because they work so hard to build the park, to create all the infrastructure, to create the park, they're too busy to enjoy it. They're sleeping. Who's in the park? The devotees. We're chanting japa. We're picking the flowers, taking them from Rukmini to Orgadish. We're having the Ratha Yatra. The devotees are the one using the park, you know. So that the devotee actually is the one who's enjoying in this world. And the last thing it says, an automatic revolving object is there made of sharp razors and thunderbolts. That's eternal time. Krishna says, time I am, and I've come to engage all men. Ultimately, everyone has to bow down before King Time. So the simple point I'm trying to make here is that if one, that renounced vision is not an artificial imposition. It's seeing things as they are. If we see this world as it is, if we make its risk analysis, if you look at the situation and analyze honestly, the best thing to do is become a devotee. And whatever struggle is there, Prabhupada gives this example. Even though there may be some struggle, if I'm hungry, and we'll end here, I promise. I may be very hungry, and I sit down at the table. It's not that as soon as I sit down at the table, automatically my hunger is gone. But I'm sitting at the table, I begin eating, immediately I feel refreshed. Immediately I feel relieved. And I know if I keep eating, I'm going to become satisfied, I'm going to become rejuvenated. I just have to continue the process. I just have to keep, everything's fine, everything's there. Similarly, we have come to the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. We look at all the great saints and sages, and we remember the history of the devotees, and we see so many devotees actually are happy. All we have to do is continue with the process, and we will become fully happy, real happiness. So we can end there. I'll read the verse again. Narada Muni asked King Prachinibharishat, "My dear king, what do you desire to achieve by performing these fruitive activities? The chief aim of life is to get rid of all misery and enjoy happiness. But these two things cannot be realized by fruitive activity." Thank you very much. I got to go, so no questions. Hare Krishna. And you're in, just one last thing. You are in a great place. You're in New Dwarka, where you have so much facility to serve Krishna. You don't want to serve this way, serve that way. You don't want to serve that way, serve this way. All we ask is you get up in the morning. Get up in the morning and go to Mangalarti. You're tired? Take a nap. Later on in the day. Is there anyone here who has not been able to take a nap? Maybe one day you can't take a nap. I have found that devotees can sleep in any circumstance.